Today is Friday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
A hog race to celebrate Chinese Year of the Pig next week. But pig farmers in China face setbacks as the new year begins after American tariffs on soybeans hiked feed prices and forced many to cut their losses by slaughtering their herds.
Also ahead, the U.S. suspends its compliance with U.S.-Russian Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which has been in effect since the Cold War. And Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir says he is reopening Sudan's border with Eritrea. It's all on today's International Edition. The United States announced today it is pulling back from a decades-old treaty that banned an entire class of nuclear weapons, sparking concern among some analysts the move could trigger a new arms race. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said effective February 2nd, Washington is suspending its compliance with the U.S.-Russian Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which has been in effect since the Cold War. The U.S. accuses Russia of violating the treaty, which bans certain ground-launched cruise missiles. Russia denies the allegation. The treaty was the world's first arms control pact to prohibit an entire class of weapons, specifically ground-launched cruise missiles with a range up to 5,500 kilometers. Pompeo told reporters today at the State Department the U.S. will provide formal notice to Russia that it is withdrawing from the INF treaty in 6 months if Russia does not return to compliance. The pullout also is due to U.S. concern that China, which is not party to the treaty, was gaining a military advantage by deploying missiles with ranges exceeding the treaty's limit. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump expressed optimism that he will achieve a very big deal with China and hinted that he may meet with President Xi Jinping before a March 1st deadline to reach a new trade pact. The president spoke yesterday as trade talks continued between American and Chinese negotiators. White House correspondent Patsy Wadaswara has the latest.
A hog race to celebrate Chinese Year of the Pig next week. But pig farmers in China face setbacks as the new year begins after American tariffs on soybeans hiked feed prices and forced many to cut their losses by slaughtering their herds. One impact of the U.S. and China trade war that negotiators from both sides are trying to work out during talks in Washington. President Donald Trump says he's optimistic.
I think it'll happen. Something will happen. But it's a very big deal. It'll be, if it does happen, it'll be by far the largest trade deal ever made.
Trump met with Chinese Vice Premier and Chief Trade Negotiator Liu He to discuss Washington's complaints that Beijing limits access to China's markets and forces U.S. companies to transfer technology to Chinese firms. On Monday, U.S. prosecutors indicted Meng Wanzhou, the chief financial officer of Chinese telecom giant Huawei Technologies, on charges of violating sanctions against Iran and stealing trade secrets from American T-Mobile.
In an effort to build their own robot, Huawei's engineers allegedly violated confidentiality and non-disclosure agreements with T-Mobile by secretly taking photos of the robot, measuring it, and even stealing a piece of it.
Beijing urged the U.S. to stop what it calls unreasonable suppression of Chinese companies. The White House insists the indictment is not linked to the talks.
They're a totally separate process. The negotiations on the trade front will continue to be ongoing.
Trump last met with Chinese President Xi Jinping in December at the G20 in Argentina. He tweeted about another meeting with Xi, whom he calls my friend, in the near future.
The final deal will be made, if it's made, will be made between myself and President Xi.
Presidential expert David Barker with American University says Trump relies on personal relationships to make deals and warns of the potential danger.
Negotiating trade with China is a little bit different than negotiating a price on a piece of real estate. And so when you don't do your homework, especially when you have these, you know, cross-cultural dynamics going on, things can go really south.
If no deal is made by March 1st, the U.S. has said it will increase the tariff rate from 10% to 25% on Chinese goods worth an estimated $200 billion. The president has also threatened tariffs on an additional $267 billion worth of Chinese products. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Thank you, Patsy. Well, special immigrant visas are a lifeline for Iraqi and Afghan interpreters and other professionals working for the U.S. government who face credible threats as a consequence of their employment. These visas allow them to immigrate to the U.S. and safety. But as U.S. troop withdrawals from Afghanistan become a possibility, no new SIVs have been scheduled for this year. VOA's Ramon Taylor reports that thousands are in limbo.
With the U.S. nearing a possible peace plan with the Taliban, a feeling of uncertainty has swept over some 19,000 Afghans waiting for special immigrant visas, or SIVs. The decade-old visa program is granted to locals working on behalf of the U.S. government who face threats due to the inherent risks of their jobs. Afghan SIV recipient Janice Shinwadi is co-founder of No One Left Behind, a U.S.-based group that helps those who have worked for the U.S. military during its mission. He says a peace agreement puts them at greater risk.
They can't come here to kill an American. Mm-hmm. The easiest way they will kill somebody who support the U.S. troops in Afghanistan, which are interpreters and translators.
I was trying to help them to help us.
The Interpreters documents the dangers faced by Iraqi and Afghan interpreters working for the U.S. military, along with long waiting times for SIVs. Coupled with the prospect of U.S. troop withdrawals from Afghanistan, applicants and would-be applicants are stuck.
These guys are still out there. They're still experiencing the danger and the threat and the aftermath of, you know, a war that's not over.
Congress has authorized 14,500 SIVs for Afghan principal applicants since 2014, including 3,500 in fiscal year 2018. The Trump administration has expressed disappointment that its funding for 4,000 visas has been dropped from the 2019 budget because of a budgetary rule. Meanwhile, several SIV holders have been detained en route to the U.S. since the Trump administration implemented measures to increase scrutiny of travelers 2 years ago.
We're introducing them to community volunteers. We're reinforcing for them that they are welcome here, that they have a lot of support. But hearing from the news that this kind of thing is going on, that there are other people who are not allowed to travel, who are still overseas, definitely, I think, creates some confusion and worry.
Whether there will be any additional SIVs in 2019 is now up to the U.S. Congress. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
Thank you, Ramon. The United States imposed visa restrictions on Ghanaian nationals yesterday, making it more difficult for citizens of the country to visit the U.S. The Trump administration levied the sanctions, accusing Ghana of not repatriating Ghanaians departed from the U.S. Ghana has failed to live up to its obligations under international law to accept the return of its nationals ordered removed from the U.S., Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen said in a press release. The U.S. periodically restricts visas when countries fail to allow citizens removed from the U.S. to be repatriated in their nation of birth. Among the top stories in the world, Cameroon's arrested opposition leader Maurice Kamto and his supporters start a hunger strike a day after they were told they will face 8 charges amounting to treason. Myanmar lawyers for 2 Reuters journalists serving a 7-year prison sentence linked to their reporting on the Rohingya crisis filed an appeal today with the Supreme Court. And Roman Catholic officials in the U.S. state of Texas released the names of nearly 300 priests and others accused of sexually abusing thousands of children. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international group of scientists has identified a new giant plant-eating dinosaur species in South Africa. The team's research and findings are detailed in a study published in the journal Current Biology. Called the Ledumahadi Mafubi, which in the South African indigenous language of Sesotho means a giant thunderclap at dawn. The study suggests when it was alive about 200 million years ago, it was the largest land animal. According to the researchers, the dinosaur weighed about 12 metric tons and its height at its hips was about 4 meters, which was about twice the size of a large African elephant. The dinosaur remains that led to this discovery were found near Clarens in South Africa's Free State Province. Study authors say the Ledumahadi Mafubi is a close early relative to sauropod dinosaurs such as the Brontosaurus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition, and Venezuela's interim president Juan Guaido says his family was threatened by the regime yesterday as disputed President Nicolas Maduro refuses to step down. Guaido has declared himself Venezuela's interim president amid massive protests against Maduro, who began his second term January 10th after elections widely deemed as fraudulent. The U.S. and other regional countries have recognized Guaido as interim president, while China, Russia, and Turkey support Maduro. VOA's Zlata Zahok has more.
Guaido told reporters Thursday that special police had visited his residence while he was out and asked to see his wife, who was at home with their 20-month-old daughter. He thanked the neighbors for protecting her.
First, two agents arrived on motorcycles. Then there was a white unmarked station wagon, and they approached my residence and started asking for Fabiana. They were members of the security forces.
The agent's visit occurred while Guaido was at the University of Venezuela presenting his vision for the future of the country. Venezuela has been mired in poverty. Its oil-based economy is in decline, and the government is implicated in criminal activity. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence on Thursday praised the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration for discovering links between Maduro's regime and drug trafficking.
Where your investigations have targeted the corrupt narco-dictatorship of Nicolas Maduro and helped bring drug trafficking indictments and convictions against several members of Maduro's family and inner circle. The DEA has played a role. And now we see an interim president in Venezuela.
The socialist leader still has many supporters in Venezuela.
Commander Nicolas Maduro is our legitimate president. Venezuelans voted him in on May 20th, 2018.
The actions that the U.S. is taking is because they want, through Guaido, to take Venezuela's riches, and that's not right. This man has not been elected.
Venezuela's military is still behind Maduro, but analysts say that support won't last long because military leaders know that the money to pay them is running out.
What they also know, especially the National Guard leadership who has been involved in various different scams involving drugs and contraband goods on the border, possibly cocaine trafficking, of course the famous Cartel de los Soles, and other activities. And in many ways, those who have been complicit face the risk of either extradition to the United States or the risk of, at the very least, losing the assets that they've gained.
Maduro says he's open to talks with the opposition, but has ruled out holding new elections. Zlata Zahok, VOA News, Washington.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir declared yesterday that he is reopening Sudan's border with Eritrea, which has been closed due to political friction for nearly a year. Bashir also acknowledged that the country's six-week-old protest movement has put him under serious pressure. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
As protesters demonstrated in parts of the Sudanese capital of Khartoum on Thursday, President Omar al-Bashir visited the northeastern state of Kassala, announcing that the border between neighboring Eritrea and Sudan would be reopened after a year of closure. He says that he greets the people of Eritrea and its president, and he proclaims that the border between the two countries is now open because they are our dear brethren, despite the fact that politics has caused division among us. He went on to tell supporters that it was the duty of the government to have a dialogue with young people and that the government must educate them and provide for their needs. He insisted, however, that any political change will only take place through elections. He says that there will be no change of government or of the president via Facebook or WhatsApp, and vows that change will only take place at the ballot box. Sudan's Association of Trade Unions called for another day of protest against the government Thursday, prompting a number of demonstrations in Khartoum and other parts of the country. The group's spokesman, Mohamed Asbat, told Al-Hora TV that the government's appeal for dialogue with young people and the release of prisoners is not sincere. Asbat says that the government's message that it is releasing prisoners and undertaking dialogue is intended for the consumption of outside countries who have been warning it not to arrest peaceful protesters and to release them. Opposition leader Miriam Sadiq al-Mahdi, who was briefly detained by Sudanese security forces Wednesday, told Al-Hora TV that the government's efforts at dialogue have failed and that in the face of a growing revolution, it has resorted to arresting young people. She says that President Bashir's round of visits to far-flung provinces does not reflect any desire on the part of the Sudanese people that he remain in power, and that it is normal for dictators to draw their supporters around them to make it look like they are popular. Sudan's intelligence chief, General Salah Ghosh, has met with a number of young protesters who have been jailed for taking part in demonstrations, but opposition leaders say that he and the government have released very few prisoners out of the several thousand they say are being detained. Ghosh insisted in a speech to military cadets that outside forces are trying to create chaos inside the country. He says that there are forces trying to create chaos in the country and cause economic hardship for its people, but that the security forces will combat them with force and determination and restore order. Al-Arabiya TV reports that Ghosh asserted that leftist parties are trying to overthrow the government and stated that a number of armies or militia groups are waiting for Khartoum to be engulfed in chaos in order to march on the capital and seize power. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Well, more than 700 people have been sickened with Ebola in the DRC, and of those, more than 400 have died. The neighboring countries of South Sudan and Rwanda are bracing for the virus to spread. But half a world away, U.S. researchers are racing to develop a new, long-lasting vaccine against the virus. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
In Congo, Ebola claims the lives of 60% of those who get the virus. The disease is so feared that even those who survive it are shunned.
What really makes it frightening is the high mortality rate, the very severe symptoms that people experience, and, you know, the fact that it comes up when not expected.
Dr. Paul Spearman is the lead investigator of a clinical trial that's testing two experimental Ebola vaccines at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio.
We're giving one vaccine and followed 1 week later by another vaccine, and that could give you very rapid protection.
If this vaccine combination proves effective, it could be used in African countries wherever Ebola breaks out.
These epidemics that occur in several parts of Africa can arise without warning.
The vaccines don't contain the Ebola virus, but they produce a major Ebola virus protein that's designed to get the immune system to react. The study participants are all volunteers. Like Christy Keller, they're aware of the health and humanitarian crisis Ebola causes.
With research, through research, to stop it or prevent it, or make it so that it's not something that grows rapidly or spreads rapidly, then I think being a part of something like that is worth it.
In the laboratories at Cincinnati Children's, researchers test the volunteers' blood samples, which are collected before getting injected with the experimental vaccines and also afterwards. The goal is to produce a vaccine that is both effective and long-lasting and safe. Carnell Singh leads the sample testing in his lab at Cincinnati Children's.
We have baseline after 1 week, after 2 weeks, and we compare the three and then see what difference vaccination makes.
Another vaccine is being used in the outbreak in Congo, developing effective vaccines that protect against Ebola for a long time, is a top global public health priority. The researchers in Cincinnati hope their work will improve the understanding of how to build immunity to other viruses or bacteria that can cause disease. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Thank you, Carol. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty of VOA Africa. I will be in Nigeria starting February 6th to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows, Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center at the National Defense University, talks with hosts Carol Castiel and Edward Rowima, Senior Editor in VOA's Central Africa Service, about current hot-button issues in Africa, including the disputed election results in the DRC and protests in Sudan and Zimbabwe. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Hong Kong Customs busted a massive endangered species smuggling operation from Africa, seizing a record quantity of pangolin scales along with more than 1,000 ivory tusks as authorities step up the fight against illegal wildlife trafficking. The value of the seized goods, which equates to around 500 elephants and up to 13,000 pangolins, was over $7.9 million, officials said today. Originating in Nigeria, the shipment was bound for Vietnam, they added. In a separate incident, customs officials in the northern Vietnamese port of Haiphong discovered another 1.4 tons of pangolin scales in a shipping container sent from Nigeria, the state-run Vietnam news agency reported today. Last October, Vietnam intercepted more than 8 metric tons of pangolin scales and ivory, also from Nigeria, in one of the Southeast Asian country's largest wildlife trafficking cases in years. And a Manus Island detainee has taken out the prestigious 100,000 Victorian Prize for Literature, the richest literary award in the country. Kurdish journalist and poet Benruz Buchani won the award, his first-hand account of a life as a detainee on the island. His book also won the $25,000 prize for nonfiction at the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. The eligibility criteria required that the authors be Australian citizens or permanent residents. It was overlooked to award this prize. Mr. Buchani told the Herald Sun from Manus Island, where he has been detained for more than 5 years, that the award was a victory for literature, resistance, and humanity. But he added, "I don't want to celebrate this achievement while I still see many innocent people suffering around me." You've been listening to International Edition. You can also find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, finally, it's the weekend. Hey,
Hey everybody, this is Heather Maxwell. Do you want to really enjoy your weekend? I can help you with that. You don't even have to leave your home or spend a single cent. Just tune in to your local radio station and listen to Music Time in Africa. This Sunday introduces Nigerian Afrofusion artist
Seun Olota, and it's titled Oweri Soup.
Yes.
Song of the Week, Katika, and so much more. Katika. Don't miss it. 1505 or 20500.